You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more.
This is your host, Simon Scriver.
But I'm on holiday at the moment, so here is your guest host for today, Sarah Lyons.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. As you can tell from the lack of an Irish accent, I am not Simon, although like him, I do enjoy a good cup of tea. My name is Sarah Lyon, and I am a fundraiser in Canada whom Simon has handed over the microphone to while he is on vacation. Today, I want to talk about something that we all experience as fundraisers. No, not crippling fear, but how we approach taking on something new. We may find it scary or exciting, look at it as a new opportunity, or as a directive from a board member. My guest this episode knows a thing or two about approaching a new idea for fundraising. Personally, I turn to him for guidance, whether that is emailing him, waiting impatiently for a post on LinkedIn, or Facebook stalking. I think that Brock Warner from War Child in Toronto is brilliant. So, welcome, Brock.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This is a blast.
So happy that you could do this. And for those listeners outside of Canada, I am not, Toronto is not close to everything. So Brock is talking to me over Skype from a couple of provinces away. So thank you for taking the time. And Brock, tell us about yourself.
So I do work here at War Child. I work for War Child Canada. I know this is an international podcast, so there is a War Child Holland and a War Child UK and some other smaller War Childs popping up. So I hope that that name and brand isn't unfamiliar to everyone. It's an international humanitarian organization that helps protect children from the brutal impacts of war. And I've been here for 7 years, and currently I'm the Director of Community Giving and Innovation. But I also am a part-time professor at Humber College in their business school. They have a postgraduate fundraising program, a certificate program. I teach the e-philanthropy and social media course every fall there. And suppose it might be worth noting that I love presenting and teaching within the AFP network and the family of conferences. Most recently, I spoke at the AFP Icon in San Antonio, a session about design thinking and applying donor-centric design thinking fundamentals to your fundraising program. And I presented last fall at AFP Toronto Congress. It's really energizing to me to be able to meet other fundraisers, share ideas, because often I get as much back as I give, if not far more.
Awesome. So welcome, world, and welcome, Brock. So I think, you know, when we talk about e-philanthropy and new ideas, I need to start off with the burning question that we all have, Brock. How can we use Wizards Unite in our fundraising?
Oh, geez. We'll start. I don't know.
Do you remember that that was going on around Pokemon Go? There was blog posts and ideas, and then Wizards Unite came out and nothing.
Well, I don't have a good answer for you, Sarah.
And that's the end of our podcast, everyone.
Do you know? Do you have any thoughts?
You know what? When Pokemon Go came out, it wasn't about getting fundraising for us. We happened to be at a location which was a Pokestop. So we did put up a sign to welcome Poke players and invite them to come in. And nobody ever did. For us at the Alzheimer's Society, it wasn't the target market. But I don't think it's about fundraising necessarily when you look at those things. Now, esports, on the other hand, seems to be a huge fundraising stream.
There is a lot of potential in esports. Let me give you two success stories, and or one success story and one failure story about Pokemon Go first.
Yeah.
There was a small theater, I believe it was called the Storefront Theater, really close to my house, like within 100 meters of my house. And they were a Pokestop, unwittingly, but excitingly became a Pokestop. And they put a big sign outside that said, "Come for the Go, stay for the show." Oh. And They have since long been replaced, and it's now a vintage clothing store. That would be the failure. But the positive one is right around the time Pokemon Go launched, I was on paternity leave with my second and youngest daughter, Stella. And she needed to be walking. She needed to be moving. So I was pushing that stroller around for like 30,000 steps a day and finding Pokestops. And a Pokestop that I found was a little tiny back alley collaboratory is what they call themselves. And it's called Site 3, S-I-T-E and the number 3. And that was a Pokestop. And then I went home and I Googled what it was. And I saw the type of classes they were offering. I took a woodworking class there and I follow them on Facebook and Twitter. And from what I can tell, they've only continued to thrive and grow in membership and offerings. And so good for them. I think that they were a beneficiary. Not everybody can capitalize on it, but who knows?
Amazing.
Esports. I heard a stat a while ago, and if someone wants to fact check me and correct me on this, I'm open to that, but that more people at one time were watching a StarCraft World Championships than the Super Bowl, that this was just such a huge phenomena, and that in terms of mainstream pop culture, in terms of TV, cable TV, and radio, it was going relatively unnoticed and not looked at 9-10 years ago. And I feel like corporate culture is starting to wake up to it. I see a lot of more sponsorships getting involved in it. I think that for many years, there are professional esports players or gamers, I might be getting that name wrong, but who make a very, very healthy living off of this. And I think that if the corporate culture is just starting to catch up, then the nonprofits maybe should, if not already, be following right behind and participating. We have lots of conversations here at Warchild about what our participation in the esports world might look like. We've already begun to make inroads in the gaming world and the tech world, but esports is a whole other world within a world, if that's helpful. And so what I don't have are great examples of charities endeavoring and making great partnerships in the esports competitive gaming world. I'd love to see that. And for anyone who's listening, find me on Twitter, find me on LinkedIn, and send me examples of that. Because I do think there are good examples of charitable partnerships in the gaming world. Warchild internationally has actually made some really significant investments in this area and has had some great partnerships in place. They have made mistakes and talked openly about those mistakes and improved on it. I was at the Resource Alliance IFC in Holland probably 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and there was a Warchild UK staff person who I thought gave a really fascinating session on gaming and Warchild UK's path into the gaming world. And it looked like starting with sort of hackathon style game development, putting together packages of small games that were developed in a short amount of time. They started in the PC world and they learned from some of they identified opportunities for how the next time they move forward with new partners or with the same partners, how might they make more of the opportunity? And so there was moving from PC gaming eventually to online gaming. It looked like alignments and integrations into existing games with big fan bases that already exist, as opposed to creating a new game where there isn't a fan base and there aren't millions of marketing and PR dollars behind it. And so it's a really, really exciting and fertile space. And the generosity of gamers should absolutely not be underestimated.
Right.
Generally, if people are buying these expensive consoles or expensive PCs to play their games, and then they are buying those games, that's somewhat a signifier of disposable income. And so
right.
they shouldn't be counted out entirely. And little signals I'm seeing in the market are gameathons, I'm pretty sure there's one in the U.S. called Stupid Games Done Quick. Have you heard of this?
No.
So within gaming, speedrunning is a thing where there are gamers who will obsessively try to improve their speed on the completion of a certain game or a certain level. There's leaderboards. It's competed on for years and years and years. Often it's live streamed on Twitch, and these people also have lots of audiences following them. And sometimes they're doing this with really popular games like Super Mario Brothers, Mario Kart 64. They're doing these big popular games, but there have been a lot of really stupid video games over the years, and Stupid Games Done Quick is speedrunning of stupid games. And they choose a beneficiary charity as the charity of choice. And I'm pretty sure the last time I saw it, and unless it's changed within the last year, Doctors Without Borders was a beneficiary. And we're talking over $1 million worth of fundraising, I believe, for Stupid Games Done Quick.
Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
So there are big opportunities out there for a charity that is willing, able, and comfortable to dip their toe or introduce themselves to this new market. It's out there.
So that's my question for you, Brock, because, like I said, I turn to you when something comes out. What, for you as a fundraiser, you know, there's going to be lots of people who are listening who just explaining esports to a supervisor, director board is going to be not felt as worth the time, because that's going to be the main barrier. It's not necessarily that the money is there, but it's just the main barrier of this is where we should go. So how do you embrace a new idea in fundraising? Like, what is your thought process? Where's your gut check? How do you proceed? What, like, do you pilot? Like, I want to know how you look at something, because I think you look at it with such a brilliant mind and say, yeah, we need to try this.
The path here at War Child, I would say I often try to create a little safe, protective container within the organization. And I know I'm sort of painting an abstract idea, but it might look like talking to a couple individuals in the organization, as opposed to calling a staff meeting or just dropping it onto the website. I'll start with a few people who I think would be open to this idea, and I sort of pressure test it with them. I'm just stress testing the idea, the big what if. What if War Child were to do X in the esports world? And we can have a really open, honest, productive conversation about it, because these are people I trust and because it's not debating the merits of something that is in the market. I have no personal stake in this. And that really helps me refine the idea. And then I try to build as robust a business case as I can for a new idea, because I want to be able to demonstrate to the people in the organization that this new idea is something I've thought through. And so when I can then start to pull in market research on the size of the market, the demographics of the customer base, the other charitable partnerships that may or may not exist in this space, then I'm further testing the idea. And this is a lot of work. This is maybe why not everybody is pursuing new ideas all the time, because it's hard work, and it's absolutely in addition to the type of work that I am expected to do every single day. And I am first and foremost a fundraiser at War Child. The word innovation is in my title, but I have to make sure that there is not a donor that goes unthanked, that there isn't a proposal that is missing a deadline. All of those things are done far beyond and first before I start poking around in esports to pick an example. And so by the time I put in all of this work, I've put the idea pretty heavily to the test. And then I would bring it to a wider group of the team. And then the conversations turn less into viability or whether or not there's a demand or a market. And then the conversations look more like, do we have the capacity for this? What would this mean for us long term? Who would be responsible for this? What dependencies do we have? And so these are the more nuts and bolts conversations. And then if we all feel like it's it's time to go, it's time to do it, then that first outward facing version of it does look like a small test. And it might go unnoticed, or it might actually be something that people get talking about. And once it's out there living in the real world, we also start to find out what the true value of it is. An example of this could be cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
Warchild was an early adopter of cryptocurrency donations, and we were comfortable dipping our toe into that and introducing ourselves to that space. And what we learned after about a year, 18 months of that, was we weren't getting a lot of donations. We still don't get a lot of donations of cryptocurrency.
Okay.
But it actually serves a very, has been serving a very different purpose of demonstrating our willingness to innovate.
Yes.
It shows that Warchild is open to taking chances, and that might be a meaningful signal to a tech company who's looking for their next charitable partner. There are companies out there, startups, tech companies, cannabis producers, that are looking for charitable partners that might be somewhat on the periphery of the more established traditional charities, and how do they make that determination that this charity is different? It might be in the way that we do our work. Not only the way we do our work overseas and our life-saving programs for children, but it could also be, how do we do our work here to engage people? Who are we talking to? How are we talking to them? And are we walking the walk as well as talking the talk? And so cryptocurrency donations, being open to that, being willing to tread in those somewhat still uncertain, volatile waters, can serve that indirect fundraising end.
I have to keep reminding myself that it's a podcast, because I'm just shaking my head vigorously, because you've just hit it on the head, you know. And I was curious about that, so I'm glad that you, because I remember when you guys put out there that you were going to accept Bitcoin. And, you know, just like clutches pearls, like, oh, my God, like, this is so interesting. And so I love what you're saying there about the fact that, you know, you need to look on it past the return on that financial investment right away, and to what others might see and want to align with your organization. And when we're talking about, you know, like going back to the esports, I mean, I would assume a lot of these players are also dealing in cryptocurrency or know what it is. You don't have to explain it to them, and they might want to align. So if I'm a fundraiser and I'm listening, and maybe it's not Bitcoin, maybe it's esports, maybe it's Facebook fundraising, what would you say to the fundraiser who's listening saying, well, I can't do that? What would be the top, do you have like a top three things that you say to people around e-philanthropy as next steps?
Good question. I think that anybody can learn these skills. These are everything within digital fundraising, understanding markets like gaming and cryptocurrency. These are teachable and very much learnable, if that's a word.
Yep.
These are teachable things. And, you know, I teach the course on digital fundraising at Humber College. And I am a graduate of Humber College. I graduated over 10 years ago. And when I took that course, there was not a digital fundraising class. There was direct mail, every other kind of fundraising, but there was not a digital fundraising class. And so I didn't go to school for this. I went from that course to an internship at Amnesty International, and then into a position at Stephen Thomas Limited, a direct marketing agency that serves nonprofits and charities. They're based in Toronto, but they serve the whole a North American market, and I believe some international clients. And while there, while cutting my teeth on the basics and fundamentals of direct mail project management, I was learning how the AdWords platform worked. I was learning how Twitter worked. I signed up for Twitter around 2008 because CNN was covering Barack Obama's first race, and they said something like, Twitter is a buzz tonight. And I thought, what the heck is Twitter? And a person in a certain state of mind might dismiss that as a passing fad or tangential or unimportant. And another person in a different frame of mind who wants to learn, who is curious, might take that as a signal or a cue or like a tap on the shoulder to go figure out what is that thing. And there's no better way to learn something than to just start doing it. Mm-hmm. And if you are a person who likes to have courses and hands-on teaching, of course, I think the Humber program is great, but not everyone, very few people can take a full year out of their life to take a postgraduate program.
Right.
I don't think I could take a year out of my life to take a postgrad program, but there's quite a few resources out there that are free and available. Facebook, to run advertising platforms, has an extensive training program for free because they want you to be good at running Facebook ads, because the better you are, the more money you'll spend, and the mm-hmm. more money you'll make, and the more money you make, the more money you'll spend, and it goes around in circles. Google is exactly the same way, which also applies to YouTube. They want you to be very good at this, and they want to help. And so there's no shortage of resources. I've also used lynda.com, which there are paid versions of it. The Toronto Public Library offers it for free, and quite a few other libraries do as well. So check your local library. Mm-hmm. I would say these are all things that can be learned. So do not underestimate your own potential and capacity to learn new things, no matter where you are at a stage of your career or life.
Yeah. And I think that we, you know, I think if you're a fundraiser, you have a natural curiosity and want to learn, but sometimes you can feel quashed, you know, squashed in that, you know, there's this direct mail piece I have to get out and this annual report and I've got that board meeting. So I think that's a really, really good way for people to start, is just to start. And I think too often we want to do things at 100% and we take so long to get there that, you know, something that might be a fad or others might get on board with sooner, that maybe we need to go at 80, right? You talked about Facebook. And so I think the last time that I emailed before the asking to be on podcast was help with Facebook fundraising. So in Canada, for those who are listening from the States, we don't have access to our donors, nor do we get notified when there is a fundraiser for us. So that's been one of the hindrances for me. But what are you doing about Facebook fundraising?
I'm trying to play with it to find out what can it offer. There are absolutely limitations. Like you said, we have extremely limited information about our donors that come in via Facebook. That's because the arrangement in Canada is that Facebook is providing a front-end experience for donors who can choose to give a donation, which is processed by the PayPal Giving Fund Canada. And PayPal Giving Fund Canada is a registered charity in itself. It functions similar to a Canada Helps in that they can process those donations, directly receipt the donor, and War Child Canada is then dispersed the gross value. In this case, it's the gross value of the gift. Where PayPal Giving Fund Canada does transfer 100% of the donation without any fees to the donor. That's a nice benefit. If Sarah Lyon gives $20 to War Child, War Child will receive $20. That's fantastic, and we love that. However, on the cons side, there is quite a bit of information that is masked from the time it leaves Facebook and arrives at PayPal Giving Fund into the dashboard that charities can then extract it.
Yeah.
That presents some challenges. It presents the limitations on the stewardship and the support that we can provide those donors. Because I think we would all agree, as all the fundraisers listening to this, we all want to give our donors the best experience possible. And we know that the encouragement and the tools and the reminders along the way in their campaign journey as they work towards their deadline are going to help them raise significantly more money than if they just set it and then forget it. So those are the cons. There's pros and cons to it. And we have decided here at War Child that it's not worth writing off altogether. We know that for certain, it's not going to be our core peer-to-peer fundraising platform. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have a really robust fundraising platform or a fundraising offer right now for peer-to-peer. We have just built something called Make Blank Not War, and you can see it at make.warchild.ca. That's our first big foray in quite a while to offering the public a peer-to-peer opportunity to support War Child. And we thought Facebook fundraisers might be a good place to test that, to test the veracity of that idea. But it's not going to be at the core because of all those drawbacks we mentioned. But I don't think those drawbacks make it not worth testing. It just means that when it comes to prioritizing opportunities here and audiences and tactics and strategies, what we put at the top are the opportunities that we know we can give donors the best experience possible for.
Mm-hmm.
We also... Go ahead.
Sorry, Sarah. I think that's a perfect example. I had a gentleman come in who celebrated his 82nd birthday by holding a Facebook fundraiser. And he came in because he was upset because, you know, he knows from doing other charitable activities, he was upset that we hadn't said thank you. And, you know, it's not up for the donors to know necessarily the back end of how we get this information or not get this information. But I just remember my little fundraising heart broke breaking. You know, like, of course I wanted to say thank you and send you a birthday card and a call, but, you know, it's there and people are using it. And there's a whole other podcast that needs to go on around like micro campaigns. But you have touched on a new project that you were doing. So I remember you doing the Facebook fundraising with Make Origami, Not War. And now you've got this new website about your peer-to-peer, another new thing that you're doing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Something I believe really strongly in and have been trying to apply quite a bit here at War Child is design thinking or human-centered design. We are applying it with a lot of success in our program delivery models and our service delivery models overseas. And I think there is absolutely an opportunity to apply it in fundraising. It's not a new concept to for-profit design agencies and ad agencies, but for some reason, the fundraising world has been relatively slow to adopt this. And I'm doing my best to try and incorporate it into my work here. And the 10-second version of it is basically it's just an iterative process of being willing to make something, learn, remake it, learn some more, and it's a never-ending process. It's never-ending, iterative, circular project management rather than a linear project management where there is a finish line, you get there, and you move on to something else. So about this time last year, some changes were made here. Some portfolios were reshuffled and prioritized because we had some great new opportunities come up that we wanted some staff to be able to pursue. And that meant a couple new items coming into my team's portfolio. And one of those was the third-party fundraising. So what we did was quite quickly turned around a prototype website called make.warchild.ca. And the idea is that anyone anywhere can do something that they love to do and that they love to do with friends and family, that they should share that. And they should ask their friends and family to support them by supporting War Child. And that first website was quick and dirty. It achieved that function, but we were probably 2 months earlier than we should have been, because about 2 months after we went live, the Facebook fundraising finally launched in Canada. After years of waiting, it launched. Right. And so our fairly convoluted first process for signing up and sharing was not ideal. It was complicated and the adoption was slow. And so we wished we had known about Facebook. And so we've recently launched version 2.0 of Make Something. And We're really proud of it. We've really simplified it. And we decided to go all in on Facebook fundraising and try to leverage those tools that are there. Third-party fundraising for us is not our core fundraising proposition. It's not a big revenue line for us when you stack it up alongside our major gifts and our grants and our monthly donors. So if anywhere we're going to put something new to the test and see what potential it has, this was a great place to do it with relatively low risk and exposure to War Child. So yeah, we've now relaunched it. We haven't yet announced it formally to all of our donors, at least at the time of recording this podcast, Sarah. But so I'd say we've soft launched version 2.0. And anyone who's listening to this could go to that website, and what you're seeing is the version 2.0. It's a much simpler experience. We provide tools to the donors, and we've really stripped it down to its fundamentals. And the call to action is to do this thing, make your thing on Facebook. So we're ready to put Facebook to the test. And you touched on something that was really what tipped the scales in favor of Facebook with your story about your donor, which is that it's out there, whether we like it or not. It is out there, and some people will find it. So we should be ready. And it doesn't hurt to be ready, but it could hurt to be caught on your heels and potentially damage some important relationships.
Exactly. And that kind of leads to I have a couple more questions for you. So where, for you, when you're talking to people, is there an end? You know, like, is there something that you think, how do people know it's a trend? So again, we'll go back to that Pokemon Go, because I remember everybody joking about it, Simon being one of them. Is there a point where something is too fatty, like too much of a fad? I'm just making up words now, that you would say no, or you are a try everything if you have the time and resources and it fits your goals?
That's an interesting question. The fastest fads would probably be like a hashtag wave on Instagram or Twitter. There are always thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of conversations going on. And every once in a while, some conversation pops up into prominence. And I see some charities that are aggressive on social media, they'll hop into that conversation and participate as best they can with the best of intentions. And I often wonder what the ROI on that is. Like, do they really gather new followers from that? Who are they trying to please with that? Sometimes it makes thematic sense. The Blue for Sudan campaign has been this grassroots movement on social media, and it has made perfect sense for War Child to participate in that conversation because we work in Sudan, we have been working in Sudan and Darfur for I think over nearly 15 years. But did we post anything about the Raptors in the championship? I don't think so. We definitely did not on Instagram, but maybe if at most a passing tweet about it. So those would be the most fast moving trends that you should feel very comfortable in just letting pass by, because the next cycle, the next news cycle is going to replace it pretty quickly.
Right.
I would say that bigger trends, the ones that you might want to look closely at, listen to your gut and be open to signals out there. If you're seeing something 2-3 times, that might be the universe telling you something. Not to get too hippie about it, but it may not be coincidence. An example of that might be if you're an organization that is doing social justice work, or maybe you're working with young people in communities, you're probably catching on to the growing third wave intersectional social justice tone of conversations. And that's great. And you can interpret signals of all different types. Black Panther being what it was and the success it had was incredible. Look at what people are talking about online. Young people, use the explore section of your Instagram account and try to find what they're talking about, and you might actually see a lot of things that had you just hopped on the bus or into your car that morning, went to your office, opened up the inbox and got to work, you may not have seen. So just being open to the world, being curious about the world, and when things start to stack on top of each other, follow that thread.
Right. That's perfect. I think that's a great way to end. That was perfect. I really appreciate your time, Brock. I appreciate your time on this podcast and just an appreciation post for always being there to answer my questions. And, you know, everybody should really, do you want to put a plug in to where people can follow you? Because I'm sure there's going to be questions.
Sure. So it's Twitter, it's my name, Brock Warner. I'm less active on there these days, but I am there. And by all means, send me an invite on LinkedIn. I'm not shy about accepting connections there. And follow Warchild as well. I should plug Warchild Canada. It's Warchild Can on Twitter and on Instagram. We've recently made some big strides in improving our digital strategy and some of our tools behind the scenes and our visual identity. And so if you want to see what that looks like in actual practice, then check us out on Instagram especially. I'm really proud of what the team here has accomplished and just want to share it with the world. And for those of you who do reach out on LinkedIn, don't hesitate to ask questions. If there's something I can help you with, please reach out. I love that stuff. I get a lot of energy from that.
Perfect. Thank you, Brock.
Thank you, Sarah.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.